You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch, a little out of breath, just got here. Show prep, what's that?
Well, you know, he has that treadmill out in the lobby. He was out there working on that, right?
Right, absolutely.
Yes. All right, so, well, we have folks in the studio.
He's too nice to say what he's thinking.
No.
All right.
I do get his Facebook feed, and I see pictures of him as a young man, and he has this really long shoulder-length red hair and old hippie.
Yep.
But we also have a young hippie, Emily Heinz, who's on the phone. Calling in from way out in Ann Arbor.
Hey, Emily, how are you?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
I'm doing good. It's 80 degrees, so of course.
Yes.
I'm super excited.
Yes.
Right. Well, Emily has been the associate director at the Michigan Venture Capital Association for how long? How many years?
5 years.
No kidding.
5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now, after this week, once she gets through the Michigan Growth Capital Symposium, and I'll be there both days tomorrow shooting video.
Emily, perfect.
Yes, Emily's leaving to start something called Entry Point that seeks to fill the gaps in Michigan's entrepreneurial ecosystem. Lots of gaps, are there?
Yeah, definitely. I think that there is a ton of a really exciting growth happening in the entrepreneurial community right now. And through the work that I've done at the Michigan Venture Capital Association and at the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, I've seen a ton of really exciting things that I think could make a really big impact on the community that I would just love to be able to jump in on. So I think that by creating Entry Point, it's really allowing me the flexibility to be able to plug in where it's most helpful for the entrepreneurial community. So I'm super excited.
Yes. And so actually it was a soft launch in March. Yes.
Yes. I've been working on it on the side. And as everyone that has more than one job knows, it's been a little bit challenging to be able to do enough on the side. So it finally got to the point this last couple of weeks where I was like ready to take the full plunge and be going full time with it. So very, very cool things in the works. And so I'm really excited to be able to be working on it full time at Entry Point.
Now, I interviewed you last week, so I'm pretty up to speed on what's going on. And there's also a story on my website that you can read that'll give you the backstory. Shameless plug, of course.
Yes.
Tell us a bit more about it. Now, you in your interview with me, you were saying that you've been in all these different organizations, and it always seemed to be some missing piece out there. And so that's really the inspiration for Entry Point, right?
Yeah. So Entry Point looks to advance the entrepreneurial community through the promotion of inclusion, community engagement, and research. So a lot of that is really doing a comprehensive analysis, partnering with organizations to do a comprehensive analysis of the entrepreneurial community in Michigan to really find out what specific things can be done in different segments of the entrepreneurial community in order to accelerate the growth of startups in Michigan. Also working outside of Michigan, but I think that our primary focus will be right here in the state of Michigan initially, at least. So I'm looking to partner with organizations where we can use a data-driven approach to identify, address, and solve challenges that we're seeing all across the entrepreneurial ecosystem. I would say one major major challenge would be access to capital for early-stage companies. Another would be access and retention of top-tier talent. So I think that's a lot where the diversity and inclusion initiatives come in, and really creating a an environment where you are able to grow your network and attract the best talent possible for your startup or for your venture capital firm.
Yeah, Emily, it's Matt Rausch. I can remember. I was just, you know, let's talk access to capital for a minute.
Yes,
I can remember when I was a young cub reporter at Crain's Detroit Business in the early 1990s.
That's when you had red hair.
Yeah, right. Well, I had hair for one thing. Red. But I remember. Yeah, Mary Kramer came to me and said, here's the Crain Chicago business list, you know, Crain's loves lists, right, yep, of venture capital firms. Let's do a list of Detroit venture capital firms.
Short list, right?
And I said, it's not going to take up much space, I can tell you that right now, because back then there was like two, and, you know, one of them was affiliated with the state of Michigan pension fund, and it came in and went out, and it seemed to, you know, change with the various gubernatorial administrations. Things have improved since then. I think we should give ourselves some credit, but where do you see the need for continued improvement? Is it a particular stage? Is it a particular industry? What do you think?
Yeah, currently for the research that I do at the Michigan Venture Capital Association, as you've seen, we've had a tremendous growth in the early stage funding community in Michigan, and I think that's mirrored in the entrepreneurial community. But I think really making sure that we are continuing to push the envelope on the momentum in that community. We do have a lot of growth in the entrepreneurial community that currently I don't think the venture capital community has been able to keep up with, which is a great thing, especially for attracting capital from outside of Michigan, and for the quality of companies that venture capital firms in Michigan are seeing. But I think that right now there really is like no major area that couldn't see more growth and attention. So mobility certainly is a major focus of a lot of organizations, but I think all across life science and software, we're seeing so much growth that really helping entrepreneurs in a variety of sectors and helping investors in a variety of sectors better connect with each other, so that the best companies are getting the financing the fastest, is certainly something that will really help Michigan propel forward as we continue to see this community grow.
You know, as somebody that's been covering this industry in this state for, I don't know, almost 25 years, the real gap that I see is that initial gap, because you get the friends and family, but you can only tap them so hard, right? If we could find some kind of mechanism where you could do, like, say, $25,000, because that's below what angel investors typically invest, certainly well below what venture capitalists invest. But, I mean, I see a lot of companies that can't even manage to scrape together that first $25K in order to get going. I mean, how can we solve that problem, or can we solve that problem?
So Patty Glazer with Invest Detroit recently launched the first capital fund, and I think that speaks directly to the very earliest stage capital access problem that you're speaking about. So I think partnering with her certainly, and with other investors, Jeff Reinbelt is also on my advisory board, and between the two of them really helping understand the need for capital at the earliest stages, and helping create program and guide organizations like Invest Detroit in getting raising additional capital for these early stage investment opportunities, I think is important. But we also see problems. I mean, I wouldn't say problems. We're also seeing opportunity for growth at a later stages as well. I think that companies are struggling in the very beginning, like you say, but then they seem to be able to gain some momentum in seed stages. And then when they go to raise a Series A round, then they all of a sudden face the same issue again, where we find in Michigan, it's very difficult to put together a Series A round, and companies at the earliest stages and companies that are at Series A round are having to fly all over the country in order to raise the capital that their company needs to continue growing and hiring. So I think that certainly working with Jeff Reinbelt and Patty Glaze on my advisory board will really help guide the programs and the partnerships that we're building in order to help help companies access capital at those earlier stages.
Yeah, and I also see that you've got Ted on there, Ted Serbinski from.
Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned mobile, and I immediately was looking at your list, and he's like Mr. Mobile there, you know. So, I mean, that's – and I work closely with the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan. That's Linda Dation, and I know that's her big mantra as well. But is that where you're seeing a lot of the action is mobile, or what other areas besides mobile?
Definitely in Michigan, I think that the mobility industry and the automotive industry here has been like a really great thing, obviously for the economy, but really diversifying that beyond the traditional autos is going to really help ensure that Michigan's economy is able to withstand any economic downturns, where the mobility sector is able to take the infrastructure that we have and the great talent that we have. I think we have the highest density of mechanical engineers anywhere in the country outside of Silicon Valley. And so it's really able to like utilize the strength that we have as a state in order to, to propel Michigan forward. So certainly having Ted on the advisory board is going to be really helpful in catalyzing that growth and making sure that we're connected into a lot of the strengths that Michigan has to offer.
Let's talk about talent a little bit. You said you wanted to get involved in the talent equation as well. How do you think you can help there?
Yeah. So one side of it is really that a lot of people have trouble navigating the entrepreneurial community in Michigan. There are a ton of people working on a ton of great initiatives, and trying to get things funded and trying to figure out who to connect with next. And so I think that one way of addressing the talent issues that we're seeing across the state would be really helping connect the dots for people. And so that's why one thing that Entry Point does is focus on community engagement. And I think it's just so, so critical because we have so many great resources in Michigan that making sure that we expand our networks to certainly to women and people of color, but also just generally people looking to get more involved in the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Michigan. There are so many people that are like hearing about the great things happening in Detroit that are wanting to like move across the country to just get connected with that I think that the community engagement side of things can't be underscored enough of really helping. Since I've worked in this community for over a decade, I've seen people go to meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting where they're trying to just like get some, make those right connections. And so I think Entry Point being able to, literally be the entry point for the people that are trying to get connected with the entrepreneurial and investment community is really going to help cut down on people spinning their wheels and really help them make meaningful connections in order to grow their companies.
Okay, Emily, we've got just a few seconds left. How can people get a hold of you for more information on this venture?
Yeah, people can find out more at www.entrypointmi.com.
All right.
And all my contact information is on there.
All right. And I was going to ask you about your background, but unfortunately we're out of time. So Emily Heinz, Associate Director with the Michigan Venture Capital Association, good luck with the MVCA this week. I'm sure it's going to be wonderful as usual. And once that's over, she is launching Entry Point, and that's at entrypointmi.com. We'll be right back in just a moment with more of the M Squared Tech Cast. But for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are indeed listening to the M Squared Tech Cast at podcastdetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to another segment of the M Squared TechCast. What are we up to now? 130?
I think we're 126.
126. Okay. Well, we're getting there anyway.
I'm getting a nod from Jessica. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Who'd have thunk?
Because we take little breaks, whenever there's a holiday on a Monday, like for instance, coming up on Memorial Day weekend, we won't be doing it on Monday.
Yes, there will be no show on that day.
Yes, so. But then in September will be our third year, man.
Wow.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy.
It's like our third anniversary. What is it? It's not paper?
Paper's the first anniversary.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm 127.
Oh, 127. 127. Okay, all right. Here we go.
I think that's the third anniversary is the ice pick to the forehead anniversary.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's probably it.
All right.
And we have it. No relationship here to that now with no ice pick to the head of Joe Melnick, who's with us, who's the president and managing director of KNC Strategies, LLC, a strategy and marketing advisory company. And Joe and I go, we were just talking about that in the lobby way back. I'm thinking 15 years at least.
At least 15 years.
Right.
More probably like 20.
Yes. And I worked closely with some of Joe's previous employers, and I appreciate that, Joe. And now Joe is on his own, doing his own shtick. And tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now, Joe.
Sure. Happy to do so. Well, what I'm doing is bring together both my own experience, which has been a lot of years in doing marketing for professional services firms and manufacturers and others, as well as other resources, and applying them to companies that are looking for enhanced marketing needs, marketing capabilities. We're finding out in the marketplace that more and more companies, especially with the great economy we've had for the last several years, even traditional companies have grown to a certain point, and now they're at a point where they're trying to maintain what they've achieved, maintain the momentum they've gained, and maintain the where they're at on this whole thing. And what we're bringing together is the resources that allow basically fractional marketing, where people can come in and you'd have access to resources on an as-needed basis without having to make the full investment of bringing in full-time staff and getting the level of expertise from these various folks.
The gig economy.
The gig economy. This is just another variation on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that people in the media have been used to for years, right? Freelancers are a big part of the media economy.
Yeah.
So what are the trends you're seeing out there? How do you see companies responding to them?
Well, I see a lot of the fact that the trends of bringing together digital and traditional marketing efforts, a lot of people are, especially some more traditional companies, tend to be somewhat stymied on which way they should go and how that should happen. And what it's important for them to understand is that all of that works together. All that should be under the same umbrella. They're not really separate things. And in fact, some of the basics in terms of how people think about marketing and how they think about their companies should really start with a lot of the same basics. They're still applicable. Everything from traditional SWOT analysis, where evaluate your strengths and weaknesses of internal operations, and then look at opportunities and threats of what the external marketplace looks like. And how you get there in terms of how you deliver messages, how you communicate, ways of developing a community using social media and other things is where a lot of the digital aspects of things come in. But you need to marry those two things together. And that's why it's important to get people that have good perspective on the big picture and have been doing this for a long time, which, as Mike has said, that's where we fit in. But there's also the ability to bring in folks that are doing more cutting edge things and that have that experience as well. So those two aspects.
Yeah, it's kind of like I'll do my own shameless plug here. I mean, that Message a Month campaign that I've done, I'm doing right now, where it includes video, audio, guest columns, ads, all that jazz. that's the way we're attacking that. But, I mean, what should business leaders and executives, how should they respond to these trends? Should they do something? Give us some points there for them.
Sure. Basically, you know, typically the business leaders have very strong skills about their operations, how to do it, what they've traditionally done. They bring that expertise to the table, and that's really where their strengths are. But they also then start to see that there are pieces they're missing, where there's aspects that they wish they were hitting harder, that there's a way to get to reach certain customer bases. Then they're also finding competitors coming in that they never would have expected. They're coming in from segments are being carved out of what their business model is, and that they need to respond to that. So they're looking for ways of understanding what the marketplace looks like. So really getting back a lot of the data. They're looking at ways to better get the voice of the customer, which is often where the digital strategies can come in, and they can give you that feedback, and ways of then reaching out to new market segments. So that's part of what we try to help various companies do, is get those different market segments.
Let me sort of follow up. You've been working with, shall we say, traditional industries that may not be so tech savvy, right? Or may not be plugged into social media like they should be. How difficult is the sell has that been working in those industries? I mean, do you see them, the light bulb going off?
Well, I think more and more you're starting to see that. And a lot of it is because they're seeing the competitors coming at them that have that. And then they're seeing their traditional competitors also enhancing what they've been doing with using some of these digital strategies.
Right.
So having those that combination is starting to get people more aware of what they need to do. And then if you can demonstrate the value of what you're able to bring to the table by using some of these digital strategies, that's really where you get some real pickup on that.
Huh.
Hmm. Okay. So you know, businesses are collecting more customer data than ever. There's a fire hose of data out there. Everybody's got it. How do you address that challenge of this massive influx of customer data? I guess what does that create in terms of a need for expertise?
Well, there's definitely an expertise on how to manage that data as it comes in, a way to capture it in a way that's useful so that you can do the analysis on what that's telling you, and as well as creating new ways for it to come in, because often people are not thinking of it as an interactive dialogue that's happening between the company and their customer base. And that's what one of the things that really is essential to get in place is that dialogue. But then it goes back to some basics of being very focused on customer service and responsiveness, and finding out what they're saying, where are the pain points and some of the interactions that are going on with a company and its customer base, and then how do you come up with solutions that address that? And so that's where you're tracking where those pain points are.
And let's talk a little bit more about the convergence then of this traditional and digital marketing strategies. You've been playing around with this for some time. You come from a more traditional background. Now you're more plugged into the more social digital stuff. How do you see all that sort of merging together then?
Well, you know, in its essence, it's really it brings more channels for promoting a company and its products and services, both in the context of existing and potentially new markets, as well as just the way that how these are tactics are aligned with more of a broader strategic umbrella that includes the traditional efforts that are being done already. So you bring those things together. You need to create those ways of communicating, establishing that dialogue, collecting information and feedback from customers, and then starting using different capabilities. And this is where some of the other expertise comes in, everything from creating videos and interactive websites and podcasts, such as we're doing today, the ability to create communities around various social media platforms for various aspects of your business or service. These are just some of the capabilities that you need to enhance and becomes part of an overall offering that you're making. Often what you've seen are companies that have made an initial effort and then let it drop. And so it sits out there, and you might see a website that's not often kept up to date or that has the wrong product offerings on it. And it's just really a matter of staying on top of that. And again, it's not something that every company is going to build that expertise internally. The idea is to have an external resource available that can do it on an as-needed basis. So that's where we're looking at trying to define what where some of those as-needed services are and bring them together.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you see going forward? Where do you see this all, say, 5 years from now? I mean, you've got a pretty good idea where things are headed. I mean, are we going to see a lot of these more traditional Michigan industries fully embrace this whole idea, or are there going to be some laggards? Or,
well, there's always going to be laggards in a sense, but on the other hand, I think you're going to see some very traditional companies and traditional industries that have – not had to deal with this as or don't look at this as important, and they're going to find themselves suddenly outmaneuvered both by competitors and new entries into the market. There's amazing amounts of consolidation that go on between various different industry sectors, and there's other where there's breaking out specific specialty areas that are becoming more focused on specific parts of what people are doing. And all those things together just cause a great influx and change in the marketplace in a way that we've never seen before. And part of what, you know, I've had to do over the years is track a lot of these industries and see where those changes are, because anytime there's change, there's opportunity. And there's opportunity both for to fail and there's opportunity to succeed. And that's part of what we're trying to do is create that where it's a success.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I know you've done some of your career in professional services. Tell us a little bit about your background, if you could.
Sure. Basically, I've spent a number of years working specifically in the legal industry, doing professional services for several major law firms here in Michigan as well as in New York City. I also did some other work with design and architectural services. And then I've been involved very much with in the manufacturing sector. And I guess telling my age a little bit is that in the pre-craft beer industry, beer era, I actually worked in the brewery industry, both for a local brewer and for a multinational. So it's, you know, had a lot of different experiences that way. And then I came to Michigan actually to take over a construction company that my father owned that unfortunately was during one of our downturns. So I've learned how to ease out of a particular sector as well. So I've been through a number of both financially challenged companies and industries as well as growth.
You're not a Stroh's alumni, are you?
No, I am not.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to figure out which one it was.
It was the one in St. Louis,
oh,
whatever
that might be. Big one, yes. Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah, the German company, right?
Yeah, the big horses.
Yeah, a lot of horses. Well, the horses always got the air conditioner when the power went out before the employees.
Yeah.
Just so you know where you are in the pecking order. That's the important part. Yeah.
So what do you, as you move forward with this still kind of being conceived project.
Right.
How do you see this all playing out? Do you see this embracing a lot of different professionals as you go forward?
I think it is using a lot of different professionals, getting them involved because, again, each group, each team as they come together will not be necessarily the same makeup as the prior teams because the needs will be different. And then the other aspect of things will be that companies that realize that they need that help, but they don't want to invest or they don't have the resources to invest on a full-time basis are going to like seeing the idea that they can get top-level expertise at a fairly reasonable investment. I mean, this whole idea of talent, which we've been hearing about, is out there, but it's also there's a talent for senior executives, and it occurs on all levels for all types of companies.
Okay.
All right, Joe, we've just got a few seconds left. Let's tell people how to get a hold of you for more information.
Sure. The website is www.kncstrategies.com, or in my email and phone number contact information are there, or jmelnick@kncstrategies.com.
Okay, Joe Melnick,
President and Managing Director of KNC Strategies, LLC. Thanks for stopping by, Joe.
Well, thank you.
I'm sure you'll be back soon. But for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast, part of the PodcastDetroit.com network.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches.
Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
Good timing. Right. And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com.
Yes. All right. We have on the line calling in from downtown Detroit, Ned Stabler, longtime friend of ours, are you officially, the president of TechTown? What is your title?
Yeah, I'm the president and CEO of TechTown, and I'm the vice president for economic development at Wayne State. So I'm eating up two jobs here.
All right, but they only pay you for one, probably, right?
Unfortunately. Yep.
Welcome to the new economy.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, yeah, we got some exciting stuff to announce, and this kind of surprised me because normally I hear things in the wind, but you guys kept this pretty quiet, that Wayne State is buying NextEnerger. Have you actually bought it, or is it in the process?
We have. It is closed.
Ah,
yes.
Okay. It's a $6.6 million investment, and you're going to call it Detroit Urban Solutions? Is that what comes out of the...
No, technically the building is actually going to be the Wayne State Industry Innovation Center, or I2C.
Okay.
But separately, we're also, TechTown is launching in partnership with Wayne State and NextEnerger, Detroit Urban Solutions, which is a technology consortium. So the two are related, but they are not the same.
Ah, okay. I was a little confused too on that. So go ahead, Matt.
Well, and I'm just curious as to there's a lot of neat stuff at the NextEnerger facility. There's 18,000 square feet of high bay space. There's a microgrid to which you can plug and unplug things. A whole bunch of different things at various times have been unplugged and plugged in there. There's also a demonstration home that I still want to put on a couple of trailers and take to Northern Michigan with me, but because it's very cool. But what are your plans for all that infrastructure there? There's a lot of neat stuff there.
So the I2C is going to be a really special place. It's going to be a physical location and an opportunity for industry that wants to partner more with the university and for university faculty, staff, grad students that want to connect more with industry. So, a lot of times industry will say, hey, we want to do a partnership with Professor so-and-so. And this is going to be not just the ability to have that proximity to intellectual property, but also a physical space to do that research and to collaborate with others in the community as well.
Interesting. So you get a lot of folks involved. You got Wayne State, you got TechTown, you got NextEnerger, and it says, according to my notes you sent me, numerous other organizations. Who are some of those numerous other organizations?
Well, so that's Detroit Urban Solutions, which is our new sort of innovation district.
Got it.
That I2C is a part of, but so is TechTown, and so is the iBio across the street. And also, it has a virtual component. So really, anybody across the city of Detroit, folks like Techstars or Grand Circus or Design Core or Kaiba, you name it, that is operating in this space can be a part of this innovation district, Detroit Urban Solutions, work on commercializing smart cities technologies, including mobility, energy, digital health, civic tech, to solve problems for residents, to attract talent, to encourage innovation, and create jobs and growth here in the region.
Yeah, I saw the list of other stakeholders here. It's Detroit or Design Corp. It's Detroit Economic Growth Corp. It's New Economy Initiative, Michigan Economic Development. Our friends at Kaiba, Mike, you were involved with them for the recent IoT Tech Connect conference.
I was, yeah.
And I see Lear Corp. in there too, which is interesting from an automotive electronics standpoint. So what are the focus areas that you're going to be concentrating on here?
So, as I said, it's sort of smart city technologies, which is a broad sort of categorization, but everyone wants to talk about mobility these days, so that's certainly a piece of it. Some of it's energy and the physical infrastructure to support it. You mentioned some of the great assets that currently exist over at at the I2C facility today. Digital health is a big one. We already have a pretty developed cluster. They just had their second annual MedHealth Summit. What was that, last week or the week before? And then, of course, the civic and GovTech. And then there's all of the sort of IT that supports all of those things, you know, whether it's sort of general cyber-physical systems or cybersecurity or, you know, any of the things that are necessary in the a smart cities environment.
I don't want to ask the Matt question. I'll let Matt ask that question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was going to moving in that direction, but I step
to the
on
the script, guys.
Yes,
all
right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's the I asked this of both the I2C and DUS. I always ask is the question I always ask is, are you hiring, and if so, in what skill sets?
not I2C, but the Detroit Urban Solutions is. We're about to release a job description for a director for the consortium, and so obviously we're looking for somebody that can be doing who can do business development, who can do marketing. You know, it's largely a role that is going to better leverage existing assets because we already have so much going on in these spaces. People keep saying to me, oh, you're going to try to replace X, Y, or Z. And the answer is no, not at all. You know, we're just trying to make sure people know that we have all these great partners and resources here in the district. So we need somebody that can really build partnerships and collaboratively draw more attention to the great assets we have here. So that's kind of where we're looking. It's a lot of marketing. It's a lot of business development, air traffic control, you know, putting together partnerships and connecting people that need to be connected, those kinds of things.
Yeah, and it sounds like a good bit of economic development experience, public policy planning experience also would be a good thing to have in that position.
I think so. Some you know, technical knowledge is useful, but not, you know, you don't have to be able to build it. You need to be able to talk about it and understand it a little bit. So that's helpful as well. But yeah, I think people with backgrounds in economic development, whether it's at a chamber or in a economic development organization like a Spark in Ann Arbor, an Automation Alley, a Tech Town, those kinds of places would be good fits as well.
So I know there are offices in that building. Are those offices going to be staffed with Wayne State employees now, or how is that going to work?
Again, it's going to be a mixture of private sector folks who want to engage with the university, and then university folks that want to engage with the private sector.
Okay.
So we're still in a conversation about who's going to be in the offices. There aren't a ton of office space in there. This summer, the Venture for America national cohort is going to be based out of there. They're actually coming to Detroit with, I think it's 150 to 180 or so folks who are going to be all over the country, but they're doing their convening and their training here, and their staff is going to be there. But longer term, it will probably be a pretty decent mixture of university folks and people that want to engage with the university.
So are there tenants still remaining in the 18,000 square feet of high bay lab space there? Are there still companies in there?
There are, and we're in the middle of conversations with them right now to see which ones are an appropriate fit for the new intended use. And if folks aren't, then okay, well, what's the timetable for moving people out or helping them to find other locations? But so far, the folks we've talked to have said, look, we want to engage with the university more. You know, how can we do that? So we're sort of investigating how best to do that and see where there are good fits with the university, if possible.
Tech Town certainly has come a long ways. I've been covering you guys since you were created. I'm not even sure how many years ago that was. 15, 18 14. Years?
14.
Yeah, 14. I knew it was really. That ballpark,
yeah.
Yes. So, but I guess this will make you more techie. One of the things that's always been about Tech Town is it's there's a lot of lifestyle companies based there versus, say, tech companies. Do you see that changing? Do you see that mix changing now that you've got Next Energy under your wing or not?
Well, I don't know. You know, we don't have a target. We're trying to help all the companies that that come to us and really react to market demand. I will say I was just spending some time with Paul Reiser, who is our director, managing director of our labs or technology-based programs, who said he's seeing sort of unprecedented levels of demand from technology companies. Our incubator, the TBIC, TechTown Business Incubator Incubation Center, is as big as it ever has been. And frankly, he's been trying to keep it to 10 to 12, and he says it's up to 14, and he doesn't know what to do. We're seeing a lot more tech companies, but we're also seeing a lot more non-tech companies. So we probably will end up working with, we did about 400 businesses last year, and about 300 of them were non-tech. So, we're going to try and scale appropriately to handle the increased economic activity we're seeing in Detroit. We're fairly agnostic. Having said that, we've been pretty proactive in the tech space the last couple of years, launching the MedTech cluster and the TBIC incubator, which is new as of a couple of years ago. We're not going to slow down on the tech side, but we're called Tech Town, but we're not only tech.
I was just curious, besides tech, what would be the second or third largest industry concentrations that you deal with there?
Besides tech, there's a lot of restaurants.
Sure, I was going to say food industry. That would be one. Yeah.
Food businesses are a big one for us, and then sort of more general retail. People doing clothing and or gifts, I guess is what I'd call them, knickknacks. I don't know. So those are probably the two biggest on that side of the house.
And your footprint now, is it still the city of Detroit, or have you expanded out more into the metro area?
Well, it kind of depends on the program. I mean, for the most part, we're going to be focusing on businesses in the city of Detroit. But if companies come to us from other places and ask for help, we're not going to go and try to poach them away from another agency like ours. We're in fact quite the opposite. We're going to try to dig into why they aren't going to their local organization. And sometimes it's because, we have a particular resource that they're looking for, or that they live here, even though their business might be in a suburb. For the most part, we're going to stay our footprint on the city of Detroit, but, I'm going to help any business I can that comes to us saying they need help. Because our entire mission is to get businesses the resources they need at the right time. And, I'm fairly agnostic about where they are or what they're doing.
So you'd be willing to work with a technical college in Southfield, for instance?
I was going to ask you what you might see as a shared role for higher education in all this, because we've got some pretty interesting programs in engineering and architecture and design, as I'm sure you know, at Lawrence Tech. And, would there be a space where we could work together on things?
Absolutely. We're certainly open to those kinds of partnerships. Sometimes people have said to me at Tech Town, oh, you guys are just about Wayne State. And well, obviously Wayne State is sort of the big fish in the pond. I don't know, the big elephant in the room. I don't know. They're the big guy in the block. Pick your analogy. Here we're certainly open to working with lots of other folks and partnering. We don't view innovation as a zero sum game. We think it's all additive. So if you guys wanted to spend some time here, or spend some time with us developing some joint programming, we'd be more than happy to partner.
Yeah, and it's not just us either. It's like every university out there wants to be part of Detroit now, because Grand Valley bought a very high profile building next to Comerica Park. You've got Michigan State and the University of Michigan with new Detroit centers.
You got U of M Dearborn just put in a big engineering campus.
Yep, and Lawrence Tech has the Detroit Center for Design and Technology. That's mostly architecture and design programs, but not all. So everybody wants to be a part of what's happening there now, which is a wonderful thing.
It absolutely is, and we end up partnering a lot with them. We're a sort of a stop on the tour for a lot of those programs, and we try to help out whenever possible.
All right, we're under a minute to go, so Ned, tell us about how people where people should go online to learn more about Wayne State's initiatives in this regard, more about the I2C, more about Detroit Urban Solutions.
Wayne State, you're going to want to go to Wayne.edu. economicdevelopment.wayne.edu. And then Tech Town is techtowndetroit.org. So really either of those places will get you where you need to go. You'll be able to learn a lot more information about what we're doing.
All right. Thanks very much, Ned Stabler of Wayne State University and Tech Town. We'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are indeed listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to today's final segment of the M Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com. I'm sorry, I almost stepped on you, Mike, but not quite.
You got it. All right. So we have with us actually a new sponsor, Ahmed Elmari, who is it CEO? Are you the CEO of CyberNOR? I wasn't sure. We had many conversations, and I never asked you what your title was there. And so he's come on board. He's going to be joining us on a monthly basis to talk about CyberNOR, which an Oracle company, right? That's your claim to fame, right?
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. We're an IT systems integrator. We specialize in Oracle platforms and solutions, and we offer an array of services, including managed services, where we'll manage the entire IT footprint, including all the Oracle hardware and Oracle systems and applications and databases that may be running. We also offer application development services. We do a lot of cloud integrations and integrations like web services, as well as integrations with other third-party applications. And then we also have a specialty in performance optimization to make sure that their Oracle footprint is optimized, you know, performs well and scales and is able to handle the peak load.
All right. And I know I looked at your website. You have not only offices in, is that Southfield? It's Farmington Hills, right?
In Southfield.
Southfield. Okay. But you also have offices, one in India, and I believe, was it one in Germany?
Middle East and Iraq.
Oh, in Iraq. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. One in Iraq, and I saw two addresses in India. Do you have two places there?
Correct. We have an office in Hyderabad and also Bangalore.
Okay.
Which are the two big centers,
right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so essentially, you can do 24/7 development work, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
They're sleeping when we're awake and vice versa, right?
So. Right. A lot of our customers are some of the largest Oracle implementations in the world, and they have global operations. So that same system would power, North America, and then Europe as well as Asia. So usually when North America is finishing their day, for example, Asia-Pac is starting. Asia-Pac finishes their day, then the European users log on. And so having a global office footprint for us was key in order to provide managed services.
So for people who are not in IT, tell me a little bit about Oracle, sort of its history and what kind of processes it runs for businesses.
Sure. Oracle, of course, has a very wide portfolio of products. They've initially started as their claim to fame as a database software. Mm-hmm. And then in the 90s, they kind of developed the business applications, which is like Oracle Financials, HR, CRM suite, manufacturing, et cetera. And then following a bunch of acquisitions, for example, they bought Sun Microsystems. Mm-hmm. And so they are now in the hardware business. One of their lines of products is called Oracle Engineered Systems, or Exadata is one of the servers that are provided. They also have the Sun line, which was the Spark servers. They also acquired, Siebel, PeopleSoft, and a bunch of other large, app providers as well. So they have a very large suite of business applications, both, on-premise as well as cloud applications, as well as the hardware suite.
Larry Ellison.
Larry Ellison, correct.
I met him one time at a trade show back when I was in the trade press back in, when would that have been? In the 80s, I guess.
Yep.
Like you say, they were like the premier database company before.
That's right.
People were really, database? What's that all about?
Yeah.
And then And now he's a World Cup racer and, and he, bon vivant billionaire. And is he still with the company or not?
Yeah, yeah, he is. Yeah, he took on he was obviously, you know, CEO for the longest time.
Right.
And was really the main, you know, visionary and head of product development as well.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, he took a role of CTO, the chief technology officer,
right,
and is leading, focusing more on the product development. And, you know, Mark Hurd, as well as Safra Katz, are the co-CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about your background, how you came to get into the IT business.
Yeah, sure. So I have a computer science degree from University of Michigan.
Go Blue.
You know,
fellow alumnus over there, I'm sure you know.
I'm very low-key about it, though.
Disappointed they lost the NCAA, but next year.
Well, if Moritz has gotten so greedy and decided he wanted to play pro ball, I thought we could win it all next year. But, hey, you know, how could you say to some kid, no, you can't make $10 million?
Right, yeah.
Basically, I started as computer science, and one of the projects here in Michigan was to convert legacy databases from mainframes to Oracle. Mm. And this was in the early 90s where, you know, 300 gigabyte database in Oracle was like unheard of.
Yeah, I remember those days.
And so we had a lot of technology challenges and lots of frequent trips from here to Redwood Shores where Oracle headquarters was.
Mm-hmm.
And then Oracle approached me with a job offer. And so I moved out there and joined Oracle and worked there for more than a decade.
Wow.
And I was focused on performance optimization in terms of making sure that the business applications can perform and scale and handle the, you know, large load. And then in 2007, we started Cybernur, mm-hmm, in our Pleasanton, California office. And we started...
Was it a spin-out of Oracle?
No, it was just an independent company that we started. And our initial focus was on performance, because one of the things that I found during my tenure at Oracle was a lot of this, especially the large enterprises that have, you know, hundreds of thousands of users, really struggled with performance. You know, they complained the system is slow or it would hang, or maybe the availability wasn't right. You know, they weren't able to maintain, you know, the system running constantly without issue. And so we kind of saw that as a big demand. And unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of expertise in the field to deal with that.
Hmm.
So we initially started as, you know, performance tuning experts for, you know, Oracle platform. And then our services really, you know, evolved and took off despite, you know, 2008, 2009 and 10 being, you know, very difficult years.
Yeah, I was going to say 2007 was not exactly an auspicious year to start a business.
Yeah,
it's like starting one in 1929 or something practically.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, good grief.
That's true. I mean, you know, it was days. In fact,
those were scary times. Oh, they honestly were. Yeah.
When I was, you know, in the process of wrapping up and leaving, you know, that's a lot of my, you know, the executives at Oracle saying, "Are you sure you want to leave at this time?" You know. But really, what's interesting, our business really took off. I mean, a lot of our competitors went out of business, unfortunately. But what I really found was that because our focus was on performance tuning, and we really, our motto was, you know, we try to do things in minutes and hours that other people would take, you know, months and weeks to do. And that really allowed us to take off, because at that time, the businesses that were, are still around wanted to be more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted their systems to run faster and streamline everything. So for us, that was a really win-win situation. And that's what allowed our business to take off. And then Cybernur expanded into other areas, including managed services and application development.
And the name, where did that name come from?
So when we started, then, you know, initially we wanted something that really combined two messages. One was the cyberspace, you know, messaging in terms of, you know, cyber world. And the second thing was, you know, shedding light on, you know, performance issues or shedding light on complex computer issues. And Noor is a word that in multiple languages, in Hindi as well as Arabic, that means light.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Interesting. So it's been quite a road for you here. What have you, over the time, gosh, it's been, what, 12 years that you've been in business, right? What are the big changes that you've noticed? I mean, how have you adapted to all this stuff coming at you so fast?
Sure. Lots of transformations. I mean, the key thing really is to, you know, stay on top of things. And really, you know, embrace the new technology that's happening with respect to apps and deployments. You know, now with all the DevOps and container models, you know, that has really replaced a lot of the conventional deployments that people are doing. Now big data and, you know, data analysis is very important. So previously, for example, it was all about, you know, how can I support millions of transactions a day and get the data in the system and,
right,
you know, retain it. Now it's about how I can mine that data and, you know, make it useful and do, you know, the targeted marketing, targeted ordering, make sure we have the right, you know, items in inventory, make sure our supply chain system is efficient and scaling and can handle the demands. And so lots of different, you know, transformations are occurring. And now, of course, with cloud integrations, I mean, one of the challenges that a lot of, you know, small and medium businesses have is the IT footprint, right? And a lot of small and medium businesses, they don't want to be in the IT business.
Right.
They can't afford the luxury of hiring, you know, OS experts, security experts, database experts. They just want a system that runs and they focus on their core business. And so cloud integrations is very important these days rather than, you know, on-premise. And a lot of companies are doing hybrid clouds, mm-hmm. you know, some in remote data centers and some on-premise.
Yeah, that's really the buzzword right now. Correct. Hybrid cloud, you know. AI has got to have tremendous impact there for you guys,
absolutely.
Right?
AI, I mean, of course, encompasses a lot of things. You know, some of it is machine learning. Some of it is, you know, learned algorithms or, you know, adaptive algorithms. And big data analysis. Mm-hmm. Those are all the things that are really, you know, key these days to, you know, be able to mine the data that people have. I mean, even for example, if you just think about all the amount of unstructured data that's out there, the text, the emails, sure. you know, video streams, et cetera, and being able to mine that and intersect that with transactional data to make a business successful and mm-hmm. be able to, for example, if they want to market, they need to do targeted marketing and need to really be able to reach their customer base with the right set of recommendations.
Right.
All right. So tell me how the move from Pleasanton, California to Southfield, Michigan came about.
Yeah.
I was interested about that. So.
Yes.
So as our business grew, you know, we definitely wanted to establish a Midwest presence for two reasons. One, you know, we have a lot of customers in the Midwest as well as East Coast.
Auto industry stuff?
Surprisingly, not yet. The purpose of this is to change that today. We want to establish a customer presence in Michigan.
Right.
Today we don't yet, but we have a lot of business in the neighboring states. And it was getting very difficult to support that from California, you know, just with a time zone difference.
Oh, sure.
And so we figured, you know, let's open an office in the Midwest presence. And then we searched around. We figured, you know, Michigan was a good area, you know, very business friendly, lots of good local talent, mm-hmm. great universities. And so we purchased a building in Southfield in the past October, renovated it, and then, you know, opened for business officially, had our ribbon cutting ceremony. But one of the challenges we have so far is, you know, of course, we're obviously on all the, you know, job posting sites, et cetera. But
now, you mentioned that earlier that one of your biggest problems is finding the right people,
the local
right?
talent is a challenge for us.
Maybe you can work with a tech school in Southfield. I've heard there's a pretty good one there.
Yeah,
right?
We are around the corner. Yeah.
Definitely. We actually are in the process of discussing or in open discussions with Lawrence Tech. Since they're literally like 2-3 blocks down from our office.
Yeah. Well, he's director of communications, so you're all set there, right?
I can put you in touch with CJ if you're not already. So that's one of our leading professors of computer science. So
yeah. Excellent.
Well, hopefully we will help you get the word out. But that right now, tech talent, I mean, there's like for every person, there's like 10 job openings or something, right?
Yeah.
Offers at least, or, you know?
Yeah, that's and you know, if you're a developer in the right language or in cybersecurity, those are the two big things right now, right?
Yeah, so that's, very hot areas.
Yeah. Yep. So, and I know I haven't heard what the number was for this year, but we just had our commencement a week ago Saturday. And last year it was 89%. The year before that it was 88% of our graduates either had a job or a spot in grad school before they graduated. That's pretty good. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Especially since that's not the only thing we offer. I mean, we also have architecture, design, humanities, a whole bunch of other things. But, you know, we tend to deal in fields that people are hiring in.
So. And now you got a football team even.
Yeah, okay. First game September 1st. Be there.
Who knows? NBA, you know? Or, but basketball, I mean. You know.
All right. So at CyberNorth, this is the question I already asked. You heard me ask it to somebody else. So I'm sure you are hiring, so that one's already answered. But in what skill sets are you looking for right now?
We have a couple. We're looking for sales and marketing managers as well, you know, to help grow the business and establish the local market presence. And we're also looking for techies. Two branches of technology that we're looking at is one as performance optimization. So looking for Oracle expertise in Oracle database technologies as well as middleware. And then also on the application development, we're looking for people who are familiar with the Java middleware frameworks, heavy Java programming and development.
A lot of that talent's going to be on the coast. So how difficult, I mean, because you can afford a house in Michigan, of course you're going to get an ungodly long winter, perhaps, but if you're from the East Coast, you're used to that. But, I mean, is it hard to recruit people from the coast to come to Michigan? You know,
it is. It is. I mean, the you know, there's also a tremendous amount of demand, you know, out on the coast as well. And, you know, but I think one of the things that we, you know, offer as well is that, you know, as these those communities tend to, you know, become saturated as well, living there becomes a big challenge, right? Affordable living is a big challenge, which is causing a lot of people, you know, unfortunately, to leave other states as well. So, and I think the other big advantage of Michigan is, you know, the education factor with the, you know, number of schools that are available here and good schools that are available here, which is also a big attraction.
Sure.
All right. So we're just about done with this segment. Tell us how people can learn more about CyberNur online.
Sure. Please visit us at our website. That's www.cybernur.com.
And that's N-O-O-R after the cyber.
Correct.
Which means light.
Which means light.
Didn't know that.
I just thought it was an Arabic girl's name because there's about four of them at Edsel Ford High School in Dearborn where, I,
oh,
where
really?
I'm involved with, yeah, with the athletic program. Yeah.
Okay. And that was Ahmed Alomari, who is the CEO of CyberNur, based out of the Southfield area, but looking for great talent. So if you're looking for a job, give him a call.
Yeah, I want to thank Ahmed for appearing here today, along with all our other guests, Ned Stabler from Tech Town in Wayne State, Joe Melnick and his business, basically creating a consortium of creative entrepreneurs and also consulting with businesses in that regard. And Emily Heintz talking about her new project, Entry Point, filling the gaps in the entrepreneurial ecosystem.
We got it all covered today.
Yeah, it's all about tech-based economic development. That's what we do here.
Yeah, we're proud of it, right?
Okay.
Okay.
All right, and we will see you next week at 2 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the M Squared TechCast. But for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.